It's Monday, December 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, talks aim to build cooperation across Afghanistan, Pakistan, and India.
Sometimes they're ostracized by their own communities, by their own parents. You know, there are some superstitions that the kids might be cursed.
African children with disabilities find new meaning through sports. Also ahead, the holiday season brought a Hollywood movie, or rather a huge present, and we jump into the flow of music streaming. It's all coming up on today's International Edition. Pakistan's military leader, General Raheel Sharif, arrived in Kabul Sunday for crucial talks with Afghan political and military leaders. Officials say the discussions are focusing on promoting the Afghan peace and reconciliation process, enhancing security cooperation, and better management of the long, porous border between the two countries to prevent militant infiltration on either side. The visit comes after Afghan President Ashraf Ghani's trip to Islamabad earlier this month for a regional conference of the so-called Heart of Asia process, ending months of deadlock and bilateral ties over allegations that Pakistan's military has not cut secret ties to the Afghan Taliban. Meanwhile, there's some optimism following a brief stopover in Pakistan by India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi, who held talks with his counterpart Nawaz Sharif. From Islamabad, Ayaz Ghul reports this was the first time in 12 years that an Indian prime minister visited the rival country.
Prime Minister Narendra Modi landed in Lahore on the way back to India after visiting Afghanistan. Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif received him at the airport before the two leaders were flown by helicopter to Sharif's sprawling residence near the eastern city for an hour-long meeting. Modi left for India immediately after the talks and was seen off by Sharif at the airport. Pakistan's Foreign Secretary Ezaz Ahmed Chaudhry, who attended the meeting, told reporters the discussions were held in a cordial and positive atmosphere. He said the Indian Prime Minister telephoned Sharif late Friday morning and expressed his desire to undertake the goodwill visit, and the Pakistani Prime Minister welcomed the initiative as an important step to bring their rival nations closer.
मुलाकात में अलल अमूम इस बात का इजहार किया गया.
Chaudhry said the two leaders agreed to carry forward the recently resumed bilateral dialogue process and enhance bilateral contacts and work together to establish good neighborly relations. He said Prime Minister Modi also wished his Pakistani counterpart a happy 66th birthday. Sharif and Modi first revived high-level contact between India and Pakistan with a brief conversation 2 weeks ago on the sidelines of an international conference in Paris. While in Afghanistan earlier on Friday, Modi addressed Afghan lawmakers and called for greater regional cooperation to help the war-ravaged country overcome its security and economic challenges.
When Afghanistan becomes a haven of peace and a hub for the flow of ideas, commerce, energy, and investment in the region, we will all prosper together. That is why I hope that Pakistan will become a bridge between South Asia and Afghanistan and beyond. I hope that the day will come soon when energy from Central Asia will power prosperity in our region.
It is widely perceived that Pakistan and India are engaged in a proxy war on Afghan soil in their bid to influence developments in Afghanistan. Islamabad dismisses the impression, and Modi on Friday also tried to allay those fears.
You know that India is here to contribute, not to compete, to lay the foundations of future, not light the flame of conflict, to rebuild lives, not destroy a nation.
The recent thaw in traditionally strained ties between India and Pakistan is seen as key to promoting regional peace and economic stability. Pakistani, Afghan and Indian leaders gathered in Turkmenistan earlier this month to jointly open construction work on a multi-billion dollar pipeline for transporting natural gas through Afghanistan to Pakistan and India. Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Islamabad.
Time for us to now check out what's trending online, and we welcome back our social media correspondent, G. Abby Lee. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. Nice to be back.
Good to have you. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani made some interesting remarks Sunday. Can you fill us in?
Sure. Rouhani called on Muslim countries to unite and work towards improving the image of Islam. He was speaking at an international conference in capital Tehran and criticized the divisions and violence in the Muslim world. And this is what he said. We must remove Islam's negative image from today's cyber and real space. There is neither a Shiite nor a Sunni crescent. We have one Islamic moon.
Well, that sounds like a pretty moderate mark coming from him. Why are people talking about it?
Well, that's because that is not all he said. The controversial part comes later. He took jabs at Saudi Arabia for purchasing weapons from America and argued Israel is happy about the ongoing crisis in Syria. He asked these questions. Does the weakening of Syria benefit its Muslim neighbors? Does the destruction of Syria lead to the strengthening of Turkey, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, or other countries? Who is pleased with Syria's destruction other than Israel? Ouch. American TV station CBS posted a video of him making the remarks on Facebook, so let's check out one of the comments. The most popular comment is one that argues against Rouhani. It reads like this. It is benefiting Iran. As the situation worsens in Syria, Iran is taking advantage of that without any contribution, trying to get closer to Russia. More turmoil in Syria means Iran will have more access to Syria psychologically.
I see. So let's look at some of the reactions to a non-U.S. media reaction as well.
Sure. So I went on to check out what people are commenting on Reuters India's Facebook post, and it seemed like people are sharing pretty similar sentiments as the ones commenting under the CBS post. Here's the most popular reply. Remove Islam's negative image, then remove the Quran, Hadith, and Surah, etc., or totally rewrite them. So, as you can see, Jim, there is definitely a case for improving the image of the religion in some parts of the world. Jim?
And including right here in the United States. Mm-hmm. Thank you, G, for always bringing us what's buzzing online. You can follow her on Twitter at G Abby Lee. And, of course, all of us are out there on International Editions account at VOA underscore IE. I'm out there on as well on Twitter at VOA Stevenson. This is VOA.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar at voanews.com and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Well, the end of the year holiday season is quite busy for most of us, but there's one place that is very quiet, the halls of Congress. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman joins us to discuss a few big issues that members of Congress will be faced with upon their return.
Indeed, Jim. It's a very quiet time. I haven't even bothered to go to the VOA booth over at the Senate. I've been cloistered away in the VOA newsroom. But it is a time to be thinking about the next year and how Congress might function, the various pieces of legislation that might come up, and how the presidential election might impact it all.
All these things certainly looming as we look ahead to 2016. Let's begin with some things that Congress will be faced with upon their return.
They are going to be looking at a big trade deal. the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and there will eventually be a vote on that. And because last year they passed what's known as Trade Promotion Authority, that means that both chambers will be voting up or down, yes or no, and simple majority votes will get the legislation approved. You can imagine the battle lines that are going to be drawn with labor unions and environmentalists on one side and America's business community on the other. Smart Money says that it will squeak by, but that is really not assured. There are actually some elements of the deal that Republicans who are normally supportive of free trade object to.
Especially when you're talking about up or down votes, these things could get quite interesting.
Indeed. And the fact that it will be happening in a presidential election year always means that it's a wild card. You also have to realize that at least on the Senate side, Republicans secured their majority just in 2014. They want to defend that majority. But most of the contested seats are Republican-held seats, and a lot of those seats are in what are known as purple to bluish states, states where the voters might well elect another Republican or could swing control of those seats back to the Democrats. And if the Democrats pick up four seats, then they retake control of the Senate.
Another big issue, at least in terms of foreign policy, that we've seen crop up in 2015 is the threat of terrorism and how the United States wants to handle the battle against Islamic State. And certainly members of Congress are going to be looking at that pretty closely as well.
I would imagine so. And it's sort of a multi-layered thing. There will be those who want a more muscular U.S. military response out in the field, out in the Middle East, over the skies of Syria, over the skies of Iraq, and perhaps with U.S. ground troops in some capacity actually taking part in ground operations. Then you have those who are more focused on the domestic side, who say that, well, we can't control what happens in the Middle East, but we need to make sure that appropriate domestic security measures are taken. And among the Democrats, what you're hearing is this is really the time to strengthen and beef up our gun control laws, and in particular, the requirements that people who are about to purchase firearms have to go through. It's been pointed out that there are people who are on the no-fly list, who are barred from flying domestically in the United States, who nevertheless could go to a gun show and buy a semi-automatic weapon without so much as a background check.
Absolutely. Well, we hope you spend a little bit of time with us each and every week. Michael Bowman, our VOA Senate correspondent, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jim.
Children in Kenya with intellectual disabilities are often seen as the result of witchcraft, so getting the attention and services they need is a difficult task. But Catholic Relief Services is working with Special Olympics in a Nairobi slum to provide activities and a support system to these children and their parents. Joe Craig has more from Nairobi.
Living in a Nairobi slum is not easy. Electricity is scarce, clean water expensive, sanitation poor, and quality education hard to come by. But for children living with disabilities, slum life becomes even more difficult.
It's one thing if you're a kid with special needs or intellectual disabilities in a developed country, but when you consider kids growing up in a slum in Nairobi or any other slum in a major urban area in Africa, there's a huge need there, I think.
Nancy McNally of Catholic Relief Services says there are additional challenges for children with disabilities in Kenya.
If they have intellectual disabilities, then sometimes they're ostracized by their own communities, by their own parents. You know, there are some superstitions that the kids might be cursed.
So to help these children and provide a support system for their parents, Catholic Relief Services and Special Olympics started a young athletes program in the Nairobi slum of Kawangware. The program caters to children with intellectual disabilities ages 2 to 7, who come to an early childhood development center twice a week to participate in activities with other children. Social workers also conduct home visits, helping parents with emotional encouragement and positive parenting techniques. At the same time, parents like Justice Idalia are able to get support from other parents dealing with similar issues. That's important because Idalia says caring for his son Jason is around-the-clock responsibility.
These children need a very lot of care because you can't leave this children for another, maybe another neighbor, for a neighbor to take care of him. You are the one who is responsible.
Parents rarely get a break because even schooling is a problem. Ann Mushiri says many parents here cannot afford what are called special schools that service children with disabilities.
Most of them don't have a school to go to because the special schools are too expensive for them, cannot afford it. And then again, some schools don't want these children, so they just stay with them at home.
Jason's dad is unusual because most of the children's caregivers are single mothers whose husbands often leave them.
Most fathers don't like this child with a disability. Most parents, like dad, they see the child with the disability is like an outcast.
But Adalia, who is actively parenting his son, says the program has helped.
Because right now he has got a very good improvement.
There are currently 74 children in the program, and organizers say they hope to expand. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
And you can see some of Jill's great video with that story on our website at voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Star Wars The Force Awakens may be set in a galaxy far, far away, but its Christmas Day record-breaking performance was an impressive earthbound gift for the Walt Disney Company that bought the film franchise from George Lucasfilms back in 2012. The Force Awakens is now the champion of North American Christmas Day box office receipts with $49.3 million. That overtakes the previous Christmas record of $24.6 million set by Sherlock Holmes starring Robert Downey Jr. back in 2009. Worldwide, The Force Awakens has taken in an astronomical $890.3 million. Almost half of that, $440.4 million, is right here in the United States. The Force is obviously with the seventh installment of the Star Wars film franchise, as it is set to become the fastest film to reach the $1 billion mark in global ticket sales within the next few days. Well, the way we listen to music has shifted dramatically in the digital era, as streaming emerges as the prime method of hearing the newest songs. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins us in the studio to chart the biggest artists in terms of streaming for 2015, along with a couple of notable exceptions.
You used to call me on my...
Streaming was the hot music delivery system of 2016. It's been growing by leaps and bounds for the last few years. It's also the most controversial because people have been saying that artists need to be paid more. The royalties seem a little minuscule for the huge amount of streams that are going on. And of course, Taylor Swift last year withdrew all of her songs from streaming in protest of that. Nevertheless, the Spotify team earlier in December put out its list of the most streamed artists and songs for the year. And the most streamed artist of 2015 turned out to be Drake.
Ever since I left the city, you got a reputation for yourself now.
He had over 1.8 billion streams and 46 million listeners. And so he replaces Ed Sheeran as the number one streaming artist of the year. The most streamed female of 2015 was Rihanna, with 1 billion streams and 57 million listeners. But that should come with an asterisk, because the two biggest selling female acts, Adele and Taylor Swift, are not streaming their songs.
Yeah, and along with Taylor Swift, Adele made that decision not to stream.
That's right. Taylor Swift, of course, wants to see better compensation for artists. Adele says she likes her music to be an event. She wants it to have more meaning than just be a digital stream.
So who else do we have on the list, Ray?
The most streamed song of 2015 was Lean On by Major Lazer with Mo and DJ Snake. Spotify users listened to it 540 million times over the year. And it's also the most streamed song of all time on Spotify. I'm sure that record will fall in 2016. Streaming is only going up. And something that also may help the cause of streaming happened on Christmas Eve. The Beatles finally made their back catalog available on 9 different streaming platforms.
That's huge.
I mean, the Beatles have always been a little bit slow to adapt online music delivery systems. They weren't even available for downloading until 2015. And the rationale before this was that their music publishers didn't want to cut into sales of reissue and compilation CDs. Mm-hmm. But by now, they figure that the pool is big enough so that there's room for everything.
And they've been around for so long, their music is just out there, here, there, and everywhere.
Very good, very good. A couple other facts and figures for you. The most streamed album of 2015 was The Weeknd, Beauty Behind the Madness. And the most streamed artist of all time is still Ed Sheeran. He has more than 3 billion streams to date and over 59 million listeners this year.
Always counting down the hits for us, Ray McDonald. He counts down the top 20 every week right here on VOA. You can also follow him on Twitter.
Ray on the hits.
And Ray is number one in our books. Ray, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Perhaps you've been listening to International Edition by streaming it off of our website at voanews.com. We thank you if you have been, or if you downloaded it. Any way you've listened to us, thanks. You can follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Our engineer is Daryl Smith. Our director is Tracy Carter. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope you have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In 2009, President Barack Obama announced that under his administration, the United States would prioritize alleviating global hunger, undernutrition, and poverty. At the time, the global economic recession and rising food prices were forcing ever more people into food insecurity. So at the G8 summit in L'Aquila, Italy that year, President Obama committed an initial $3.5 billion to fight global hunger and poverty. Less than a year later, Feed the Future was born. It is an innovative initiative based on the premise that development efforts are most successful when the beneficiary countries determine their own food security needs and contribute to the effort. Led by the U.S. Agency for International Development, the initiative draws on 10 additional federal departments and agencies and investments from private sector partnerships. Today, it is clear that Feed the Future, coupled with other innovative U.S. government food security initiatives, are helping developing countries make substantial progress against hunger, poverty, and undernutrition. Last year alone, Feed the Future reached nearly 19 million households through assistance or training and helped bring new tools and technologies such as better seeds and fertilizers to nearly 7 million farmers. In fact, over the past 5 years in areas where Feed the Future works, the rate of childhood stunting, which indicates chronic malnutrition and leads to a host of developmental problems, has declined 9% in Ethiopia, 33% in Ghana, 25% in parts of Kenya, 21% in some areas of Cambodia, and 14.4% in areas of Bangladesh. Honduras and Bangladesh have seen a steep drop in poverty rates, and globally more than 12 million children receive nutrition interventions, such as vitamins and nutritional supplements, to help them grow and thrive. Much of the improvement has come as a result of Feed the Future's cooperation with a wide range of stakeholders to help smallholder farmers address the root causes of food insecurity and to increase economic opportunities. Through Feed the Future, the United States is partnering across borders and across sectors to unlock the transformative potential of agriculture, said USAID Associate Administrator Eric Postel. From Asia to the Caribbean to Africa, Feed the Future is helping raise crop yields and incomes, reduce stunting and poverty, and improve child nutrition. Going forward, USAID and our partners will continue working to ensure everyone has the nutritious food they need to lead full, healthy lives.